What if you just had like a crystal ball and everything that it told you everything you needed to know that was going to happen? This episode, kind of like that.
Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this.
What's up, ladies? Welcome to another episode of the Women of Video Podcast. Excited to be back in your earballs with a fresh new episode. I appreciate your patience while I was taking a little fam time, brain time, all the things time. I just needed to not have to make anything for a minute and just enjoy my life that I've been building and doing stuff in. I had the greatest talk today. So this is with Coco. Coco, I met at the Information Creator Economy Summit event, and I am just obsessed with what she does. So she has such a fascinating journey, and like she's got two things that she does. She knows things and she talks to people, which is like something I love. She predicts trends of like what people to pay attention to, what's going to happen, what videos to make, what sounds are going to be popping off on the social spaces. And she just does it by watching lots of things. And she talks about like how you can do it too and what you should be making next. She also has this fantastic, amazing show that she's doing. And I think that it's something like in the realm of like Chicken Shop Day or Hot Ones. Like, it's just so well done. What she's doing is such a concept. It's like it's not a gimmick, but it's like it's a themed situation. And it's just, it's so good. So you're going to love this episode. It's so much value, so much fun, so much good information. And yeah, let's hop in. I have been waiting for this conversation for forever. I know it hasn't been forever since we spoke last, but I am so excited because I think what you're doing is so incredibly unique. And I cannot wait for you to take us on the journey and talk us through all of the things. Are you ready, Coco?
I'm so ready. Thank you for being interested in what I have to say.
Of course. So tell us, what do you do on the internet? Like, what do you make on the internet?
Yes, such a good question. For me, I am most known for my marketing and trend prediction videos. And so, yeah, most people, like, when they meet me or introduce me, they're like, oh, she's the trend predictor girl. And I wear that title proudly. So I would say that's what it is.
Okay, so how did you get into this space? How did the creator economy call to you?
Yes. So it kind of all happened like accidentally, I guess, in a way. So I got my marketing degree in college and I wanted to get into any marketing job. I always say, like, back then I would have done marketing for a lawnmower company. I didn't care. Like, whatever job would take me, I would have it. And I replied to a Craigslist ad one night. I was working, you know, as a receptionist at a hair salon. And I just went on Craigslist one night, saw an ad for a marketing position, but they didn't say the company name. And I applied, I got it. And it ended up being this one company called Famous Birthdays. And they're like a very kiddie website, but they profile online celebrities. And so I was there in like 2018, 2019. And they basically gave me like the keys to the kingdom. They were like, all right, if you see anyone on TikTok who you think is going to be famous, invite them in for an interview and let's try to get the first interview with them. And this was before a lot of mainstream publications recognized TikTokers as like real celebrities. And it was mainly because a lot of them were just like, it had just changed from the name Musical.ly. Anyways, long story short, I was the first one to interview Charli D'Amelio. One of the videos I produced with her on YouTube got 45 million views. And then I had applied for an internship at BuzzFeed and didn't get it. But they saw that I was working on these TikTok things and no one at their company was working on TikTok. So they reached out to me and were like, hey, I know we denied you for this one job, but we actually want you to come and build out our TikTok team. So I went to BuzzFeed. I was there for 3.5 years, built out their TikTok team. And then on my lunch breaks, I would make videos about like trend predictions and who I thought was going to be famous or what, you know, what style of video was going to blow up next. And like those videos just started going so viral and I got 1 million followers. And then eventually I just ended up doing this full time because it was making a lot of money. I left BuzzFeed on good terms, but I was like, oh, I could probably just do this full time. And so that's kind of the long-winded answer of how I got into trend predicting.
Okay. How does one predict a trend?
Yes. So much of it is being okay with being wrong. Like I always say, like, I don't think I'm always going to be right. But what it is observing platforms for hours. And like I have clients and stuff, and I always tell them like my job is in order to understand Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever it is. I'm on a Snapchat kick right now. I'm trying to get into it. But I always say like part of understanding these platforms is pattern recognition. And in order to have that, you have to watch for hours every day what's happening on the platforms. I always describe going viral. It's like going to a house party. Like you can't just walk into a house party with a megaphone and say, I'm so funny, I'm so cool, you got to follow me, please follow me, please, please, please. Like they're going to ignore you. You have to be there quietly for like 30 minutes to an hour. You have to listen. What are the cool kids talking about? Do you have something of value to add? Like, you know, what are the things they're interested in? Is that something you're also interested in? So part of trend predicting is 90% just like silently watching unbiasedly. Like I'll make videos about live streaming and people will be like, you know, say so many negative things. And I'm like, look, I'm just presenting the information. I don't have a horse in the race. I'm not biased towards any of these outcomes. I'm just telling you what I'm observing. So much of it is just silently watching. Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. Do you think there's a common thread that you've seen, or even just like a couple of like what makes something viral or appealing to the masses?
Yeah. And like viral is such a loose term. So there's like, I always say like what's someone's end goal, like going viral to me is like a low aim because people can go viral and have no impact. I think that what makes something really like take off is one, obviously just like timing. If you want it to be about something that's relevant at the time, like right now, Taylor Swift albums, but is trendy. So like so much of it is timing. You could post a video a week before and it didn't go viral because of other factors in the world, but then you post it another week. Like I've worked on accounts where we've taken videos down and then reposted them a few weeks later and then it goes viral because whatever the perfect storm was. So a lot of it is timing. A lot of virality is numbers as well in terms of like the videos that you don't see. And so people don't think about it like that. People think about virality, whether it's podcasting, YouTube, TikTok, whatever, as that one video that like they're going to post it and it's going to change everything. But so much of the algorithm and training the algorithm is there's going to be 30 to 100 videos that got 0 views or maybe 2 views. And it's like you and your burner account or like you and your mom just like watching it over and over. But those 30 to 100 videos that didn't go viral are important because you're telling the algorithm, you know, hey, TikTok, I now make videos about ice skating. Hey, TikTok, I now make videos about ice skating. I make videos about ice skating. And eventually they're going to be like, okay, she's consistently posting about ice skating. Let's pump her out to 3 million people that liked an ice skating video last December, you know? So much of virality, like what makes something viral is also the things that you don't see is like training the algorithm. But when it does finally go viral, it's like, I classify it as just like reaching an audience outside of your own. Like I am lucky enough to now have 1 million followers. If a video gets 1 million views, I don't consider that viral because there's a big chance it's just hitting the audience that or I already know. Like I'm just in my own echo chamber. It's when videos get more than that, that I'm like, okay, my video is now getting outside of my audience.
Okay. So, so many pieces, so many
parts. I know, I'm so sorry. I'm like rambling.
These are my favorite conversations.
Okay,
like,
good.
Podcasting is a chance for me to talk to friends and ramble together. Like mm-hmm. That's like, if we're being honest about what is happening
and so true.
And hopefully learn stuff. But no, I love what you talked about. Like, I think that my favorite take out of this was like those first like 30 videos are so important because they're channel defining, and it allows for like, you know, and I say this about YouTube too, like you can't really know what's going on with your channel until you have like data to pull from, and like time for YouTube to figure out like who you are and what you're about. So I have to counter onto this. So I need a question answered. I think it's important what you're talking about, especially for like new accounts. Mm-hmm. What about old ones? What about like the YouTube or the Instagrammer that like has an account from like the before times? Like my Instagram, mm-hmm. I've had for a minute, and I don't do a lot with it. It's always been like just fun, randomy sorts of things. My YouTube channel has been around like almost 600 videos. What is the thing that those channels should be doing to hit viral moments?
Yes, I've actually never been asked that question, but I think it's so important. I've been at jobs where they're like, okay, we kind of feel like the algorithm isn't like boosting us anymore. And like, you know, there's this kind of like this mystery or like, and I don't think they're wrong that sometimes YouTuber platforms will reward people for making new accounts and starting fresh, because then they can go back to their stakeholders and be like, see, 100,000 people made new accounts yesterday. So I do think that there is some merit to that. I'm a big believer though in like still keeping your content up, because like, you know, there's this idea that we actually live in an internet black hole, and so much of what we're documenting about our lives now is not going to be actually accessible in like 20 to 30 years, but that's a tangent for another day. But I think that you can always change your niche. You can always take an old account and make it fresh again. It's just like the numbers game. People don't know this about me, but I actually started my TikTok account. This sounds so crazy. As a tarot account. Like me and my friends would do tarot on our downtime. I loved it. It was like my little fun passion. And I started my TikTok account making tarot videos, which is like so crazy to say. And then it was all just kind of fun. And I just noticed like, I just wasn't enjoying it anymore. And like, it wasn't like anything I was doing to make money. I was just doing it, and it kind of got some views. And I remember like aggressively pivoting. And what I did, if you do want to get like a new flame on your account again, I just was totally transparent with my audience. And I said, hey guys, you guys have found me from doing these like tarot and astrology videos, and I'll love you forever for that. I'm not ashamed of that, but I can't do this anymore. I don't enjoy it. And I think that you guys are going to see me on the internet in a new way, but I don't know what that is yet. I'm just going to take a break from my content, and I'm only going to post when I want to, not when I feel like I have to. And so I took like a month break, and then I started getting back on that same account, just like posting different videos, kind of dabbling in pop culture and marketing. And then eventually one of my videos like took off and changed my life. And so I always tell people like, don't delete your account. Like if I can go from tarot to marketing pop culture niche, you can do anything. So I hope that answers your question, that like, I don't think any account is ever a lost cause. I think that it's okay to just also tell your audience like, hey, the type of content you found me from, like, I'm going to mix it up a little bit. And like, I hope that you guys will be along for the ride, because they're going to be a lot more receptive than you think.
No, and I think it's, you hit a point. I think it's probably a little bit easier to do that on short form platform content. I don't think that works really well on YouTube, because like I have some friends and I were like, we tried, it didn't work. Yeah. They don't want us to be different. And so it really is like, you kind of either have to walk away, or you have to just go make them make something new somewhere else, or just kind of keep going there, flavor in something new from time to time. But mostly like, it's you're hard. Supposed to say one thing. And I get it. I get how it works. It's kind of like, it would make no sense for like, you know, a show that was around for 5 seasons to up and just like be something entirely different. Those don't do well, right?
Right. So it makes sense.
It's just one of those things that's like, it can be interesting. And I thought that like, that was my instant thought, because I'm an old lady in this space. And so I had to ask a question about it from like that sort of perspective, because this definitely sounds like a post-COVID audience like thing. Yes. So many people started during COVID and like after COVID, because they just wanted to like rewrite their stars and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that it's helpful to know and have those expectations. And I love the whole making a bunch of videos about one thing to tell the algorithm, this is who I am now. And like moving forward with it. Okay. So you left BuzzFeed to go into the internet and become the trends predictor for like marketing viral spaces. How did you make money?
Yes. I surprisingly make a lot of my money from consulting and people reaching out, which also, like, I feel like it's kind of how I got into this. Like, it was kind of just, I never thought I was going to go into entertainment marketing. It was just like the stars aligned for me. So much of it was, I was at my job and so much of my job, and I loved working at BuzzFeed, but so much of it was like going into meetings and telling people, you know, like, okay, so this is your niche. This is the type of creator you are, whatever it is. This is the brand you are. You're going to do this, this, and this to go viral or to build a platform. And my videos on TikTok started to go viral where I was talking about ideas like that, overarching ideas. And surprisingly, I would get so many DMs from brands, celebrities, like celebrities that I knew of that I'm like, what could I possibly offer you? But I think the reason that they're big is because they maybe like are always willing to learn. So there were like, you know, brands, celebrities, and then through word of mouth, I would get a lot of people reaching out to do consulting. And because I had a non-compete clause, I couldn't take any of these people on. And then eventually I was able to kind of like line my ducks in a row. And the moment that I quit BuzzFeed, I actually, it was on a Friday, and that Saturday I got on a flight to go to Cannes Lion to talk on panels, meet with people that I was consulting with. And so it, that's how I make a lot of my money, is behind the scenes doing consulting, which I love because, you know, brand deals are great, but you just never know how your audience is going to respond. And then, a lot of it too, part of why I signed with the management company that I'm with, which is Whaler, is I met with my talent manager, and when I started going viral, I had a few people reach out. But I met with my talent manager that I still have now 2 years later. And he told me, like, you don't have to gain another follower a day in your life. Like, you don't even have to do a ton of brand deals. Like, I think you're going to make a lot of money from, like, you could have a really unique career just going to speaking events and being on panels, and people would like pay to have you, you know. And so I signed with him, and within a month I was at Adweek in New York City getting paid to like speak on panels. And so a lot of my money is panels and consulting, and then occasionally like a brand deal or you know, some AdSense from certain social medias, but the consistent money is like these clients and stuff.
I love that you had that. So talk to us about how you're like, how did you get to Whaler? Like, what was that journey? How did they find you? Did you find them? Like, what was that all about?
Yeah. So, with Whaler, and like for anyone who doesn't know listening, they're a talent management company, and they really like specialize in content creators. So I have friends who are at talent management companies, and then their manager will also manage like The Rock or something. And so it's all these great opportunities, but it's like, you know, maybe their managers just have so many balls that they're juggling. So I liked Whaler because they specialize in creators. And so, yeah, so Rick emailed me. He just like reached out to me over email, and it was right when my account was blowing up. So I was getting a ton of like random emails. A lot of them were also just like spam emails to my personal email. And I'm so glad I saw his email. What actually stood out to me and why I took the meeting, it's so funny. He also repped like one of the girls from Selling Sunset. And I was like, oh my God, like, of course I'll take this meeting. I was like on a Selling Sunset kick. So it just worked out. And yeah, so I've been with Rick and Whaler ever since. And yeah, what I really like about them is they kind of prioritize sending me around to different events and speaking events. And that's like what I really love doing.
I think that that is so freaking cool. All right. We continue. I have more questions. Okay. So you and I met at yes. a dinner from the Information Creator Economy Summit, which we did an episode recap on. Go listen if you have not yet already. Mm-hmm. But you're doing this cool project. I want you to share with us the project, and I need the journey. How did this happen? Because it's so cool.
Oh, thank you so much. So I always wanted to do like my own show eventually. I always say, like, me as a creator, I don't really find myself interesting, nor do I want to be, but I think I'm really good at getting in the room with interesting people and like highlighting them. And so I was really inspired by, so basically the show is, it's called The Middle Row with Coco Moco. And it's where every episode I sit in a big empty movie theater with a music artist next to me. And we watch their music video on the big screen and they break it down scene by scene. And then we also just kind of like talk about their journey while eating their favorite movie snacks. Cause I was like, brand deals, hello. Like if I have them showing, you know, their favorite snacks, eventually that'll work out. That was like the BuzzFeed brain of me. And so that was my idea. I got it because I really loved shows like, there's this one show called Chicken Shop Date, and it's with this girl, Amelia Dimms. And she sits in a chicken shop in the UK with, she's had Jack Harlow on, she's had Jennifer Lawrence, and it takes celebrities out of their element. And like the whole concept is that they're on a first date with her. And then I was also inspired by shows like Hot Ones, where they eat hot wings with celebrities and every, you know, wing that they eat gets progressively spicier, or like James Corden, Carpool Karaoke, just taking celebrities out of their element and putting them in a setting that like feels unconventional and isn't just like a late night talk show or whatever. And so I was like, when would you ever sit next to an artist in like a big movie theater? And I thought that was really cool. So that's where the idea came from. And then ever since then, I just started like self-funding it. I location scouted. I was so adamant on finding a theater that had specifically red seats. Like I just wanted the visual of red seats behind us. And I've been very lucky that so many, like, I feel like when you put your idea out there, so many people want to help you. I've had so many, people at record labels that have never even met me in person, just heard of my show through the grapevine, reach out and want to put people on. And, my first guest was, an artist, her name is Toa Bird, and she just got brought out with Renee Rapp at Coachella this past weekend. And she didn't really have any like video interviews yet. Like no one had really talked to her yet. She's a newer artist. And so just, I'm really trying to capture lightning in a bottle and like interview people right before they break big. Kind of like what I did with Charlie at Famous Birthdays. I think there's something magical about being like the first one to get an interview. So yeah, so that's the show. And it's YouTube based, it's on YouTube. I'm growing my YouTube right now. And so it's been really fun.
That's what's so neat to me. I love your examples that you had, like Chicken Shop Date and all that stuff. Because I'm a super, and Hot Ones, like I'm super familiar with that is because it's really that idea of like, there's shows and then there's like internet shows and they're very different. And I think that the interview situation has changed so much, and like what you can do and how it can unfold. But I love the idea of like new and up and coming artists, because when you're in LA, which is like where all of like people go to get famous and do other stuff, and they can have fun. And plus again, tie in the theater component, another like big, like LA, like Hollywood situation. And of course, like you and everyone that's on there is like all glammed up and like looking like their best. So it's, it's just all these layers of things. And I think that what I love about what you said, because if you've listened to this podcast at all, or if you know me at all, your girl loves the money. Money first, creator. Like we've got to make sure that what we're doing can tie in income opportunities. And you're like, okay, I am going to do this. And these are how the income streams are going to attach. And these are the sponsorship deals are going to work. And here's like how the promotion will work, because I can work with these music producers and they can get their people on the show. Especially if you could do it like in a batching situation where like we rent the theater for a day and then we have like 1 hour and like turn them in and out really fast. Like that's like, it's just a lot of really smart, big growth within this.
I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it.
Where do you see this going? Like, how is it going for you? What are the steps that you're doing for it to continue to be successful? What's your production like? Give us those details.
Yes. Oh my God. I love talking about this. I think like, this is what I'm fascinated by as a creator. I think so many people feel like things just happen out of thin air. And this is why I'm always so grateful for BuzzFeed. I think working there taught me how to make something out of nothing. And so for this show, the first step was like, obviously location scouting. If anyone on here is a creator, there's this website called PeerSpace. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
Oh my God. It's basically like, and I'm literally not sponsored to say this. I just tell anyone who like will listen. PeerSpace it's kind of like Airbnb for creators where,
oh, cool.
Yeah, you can go on and, but you can just rent by the hour or even 30 minutes. And so you can find podcast studios. It's where I film like a lot of my high quality podcast episodes with my friend Nikki. And so I was on PeerSpace and I found, I just looked up theater. I found a couple theaters in LA and there was one that I really liked. So I did that when I built a relationship with the theater and they own a couple theaters around. So that was great. I'm like, okay, I have the theater figured out. And then I wanted a producer because I couldn't like hit record, run back to the seat, interview them, go hit record again. And so I had met a girl who, her name's Trina, and I had been working with her through PeerSpace on other podcast sets. And I really liked her and we had gotten lunch. And so I hired her to come on and help me produce this show. I even went to Best Buy and I just talked to one of the kids that worked there for like an hour about like cameras, lenses. Like I told him the concept. He's like, okay, you're going to need one that like, this is all jargon that went over my head, but like, he's like, you'll need a lens that can take in this type of light and blah, 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 blah. And so I really just like went on a whim. I bought these supplies. And so we film like by the hour in this theater. And next steps for me is if I get a sponsor, I would love to hire like a more high quality videographer. Like right now we're kind of just like point and shoot, hope for the best. I would love to have a videographer. I've also had some friends who do like more photography say that, you know, if I ever have the budget, they would love to come in and do photos while we're on set. We had one person that I was interviewing that, they had a hectic day and they were supposed to do a magazine shoot earlier that day and it didn't work out. And I was like, tell the magazine to just come to the theater, shoot you while we're in the theater. Like let's, you know, I already rented it. You guys can make it work. That one didn't end up like working out, but I think just kind of like, I would love to eventually get sponsors for, I want to still get like more views. Like I always say, like, I want to add value, like before I can like pitch myself. I'm like, let me get to a certain like level. And so I know it's going to take time to get there, but, sponsors, the reason that we show their favorite movie snacks in the beginning and then like long-term vision, I would love to just have like a coffee table book where it's like the celebrity and then like the page in the theater. And then the page next to them is like their movie snacks. Like, I don't know. I think there's something so endearing about like, there's something so personal about going to the movies and like, you can learn a lot about a person about like the candy that they get on their way to the theater. Like, I don't know. I just think that that kind of thing is so interesting and fun. Anyways. So yeah, I think eventually just having a sponsor and, I have a playlist on Spotify that has like 6,000 followers already where people are going to see new artists that I'm into, eventually them maybe coming on the show. So yeah, but right now I'm just focused on producing the best show that I can. And then eventually I think the money will come. But like, yeah, I just want to make a good episode every time I film.
I love that. Okay, so I have two questions. One, what's your favorite movie theater snack?
Oh my gosh. So of course, popcorn. And then I actually love sour Skittles. Yeah, even though they hurt my mouth if I eat too many. But yeah.
Mine is Skittles and popcorn together. Reminds me of when I was a Trix cereal from when I was a kid. Like they have redone that formula. It is so messed up. But if you do Skittles and popcorn together, it reminds me of like the Trix cereal from when I was a kid. I love it.
Oh my God. I'll have to try just the basic red bag of Skittles. Yeah,
so it's like one Skittle to two popcorn kernels. Like there's a formula to like balance.
Oh, like the two. Okay. I'm trying that. Thank you. I'm trying that. Okay.
It's super fun. Like my, just the merging of flavors. Okay. My second question. Oh, I totally lost my second question. This is horrible. So I got distracted. I got really excited about popcorn and Skittles. Same. Well, it'll pop up in my brain probably for random in some moments. So, okay. So you're doing all of this stuff and you're trending and doing all of these things. What is something that's happened to you that just has derailed you? And that was like kind of like a failure, but a learning moment that we can kind of learn from you as well.
Yes, I love this question. I mean, honestly, like might happen this weekend, but TikTok ban just looming. And TikTok for me is such a great way to find new clients. It's like my biggest platform. And so that is always just like such a stark reminder to not have all of my eggs in one basket, because we're not entitled to any platform. We're not entitled to any following. Like that can be taken away and we have to be okay with that and always be able to pivot. So part of also why I started the YouTube show is I knew that like this TikTok ban could potentially happen. I know it was a topic of conversation when we met and everyone was kind of talking around at the table about it because it had just like happened in the Senate. And so I think that's always something is like, even like for me, even if the TikTok ban doesn't happen, there's still a feeling of brands aren't going to be putting a ton of money towards brand deals anymore if it's on TikTok. Some of my clients that really want me to help them specifically grow their TikTok, like they aren't, you know, it's understandable. They're not going to have a need for that anymore.
For my agency, I've had clients that were like on deck to like add TikTok as a service. And they were like, nope, holding the brakes on that. Like, no, we're going to see what happens. And
exactly.
I think the thing I hate the most about the TikTok ban is like how they're trying to do it, how they're like attaching it to a Gaza aid bill. I think it's so scammy and horrible. Like it just makes me rage. It's just so,
I know
but it's, but with the thing that's important, even when we record this, which is the like middle of April, the thing that's important to note within it though, is like, it does add extra time for someone to buy it. Like it goes from 6 months to a year. So I don't think it's going anywhere. And as the girl who was the under the desk girl, that's where I learned about.
Yes. Like, under the desk news. Thing.
I love her. She's amazing. I've been trying to reach her. She's hard to get, but, She had made the point that's like, for all we know, in a year, TikTok's not even going to be relevant anymore. So you
exactly
building your audience in other places and other ways and finding ways to branch out beyond the brand. So I think that this is a cool thing for you. I think I had talked to you about this, like one of my favorite channels I follow is Cinema Therapy, and they have partnered with like a popcorn company for like for all of their stuff. And like they have like their dad, like it's like dad jokes or dad porn, like that kind of a thing. But like being able to build things away from your brand and through your brand into other places and diversification. So what do you think is the best way for brands and creators, very silly creators, to diversify what they're doing online, especially if like there's this real like issue of limitation of time and resources?
Yes. Time and resources is huge because it's so easy to be like, just grow Snapchat. And I'm like, I've been like, it's, you gotta, you know, it's like, it goes back to what we were saying about like understanding how to go viral in different platforms is like silently watching for days, months, years, you know? I think that if you want to have a loyal following that's like impactful, I always say, and again, like time and resources, long form content, like what you're doing, podcasting. I always say that the longer the video, the more object permanence there is, the more that people are going to remember you, are going to seek you out. And so, for example, if you've been prioritizing TikTok for the last couple years and it might be gone and you want to diversify, you know, doing a long form video, pulling clips from that, like don't reinvent the wheel, like take something that, you know, you spent a lot of time on and find ways to like, even for me, I did like a podcast episode once about my pop culture predictions for 2024. And instead of like cutting a bunch of clips for Instagram, I just went on Canva and like made a graphic of like, I just like wrote out physically like some of my predictions and like put it on Instagram, and it was my most liked Instagram. And so I think that if you want to create a world where your audience is always going to find you no matter what platforms come and go, long form is so important. I always say, like, you know, anyone can go viral on TikTok, but like, if I were to ask you, like, what's the last 10 videos you saw on your For You page, like recite the username, recite the topic, recite what you probably couldn't tell me. But if I was like, what's the last podcast that you listened to? You could probably tell me what the podcast was, what the topic was, why you cared about it, who the person was, what you learned. So if you want to stick around, like the people that really stick around as platforms come and go are the ones that understand object permanence. And object permanence is usually longer pieces of content versus these short, quick hits. And so that's kind of like what I think. But I mean, obviously everyone's different. But it always changes. Like you just never know, you know, what's going to be the platform that comes around next. So.
Okay. So I wouldn't be talking to the trend woman if I didn't ask you, what do you see as the next like two trends that creators could just like, you should get in on this so that you can be relevant and spicy and all of the things?
Yes. I guess I'll do one for creators. And then I also just have one that I think is going to be like a overarching like social media thing that's going to change in the next few years. And I brought this, I'll start with that one. I brought it up. I was actually talking to the woman who's been in charge of Red Bull marketing for 20 years. Her name is Nyla. And she's like, I always say Red Bull marketing is like, they're the best out of any brand ever. And I was telling her that I think that in like 2 or 3 years, we're going to see platforms like Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, get rid of public metrics. And I know that sounds so crazy, but I think it's why platforms like Snapchat have kind of like withstood the test of time, even if they're not the best content, because Gen Z and Gen Alpha loves not, like they can post a Snapchat and no one knows if it got 1 million views, if it got 1 view, no one knows how many followers they have. Like, I think that we're going to see huge platforms in the next couple years get rid of being able to see anyone's followers. I know that's crazy from a branded standpoint. I think internally, you'll still be able to see how many views like a video got because if a brand is like, okay, how many views did our brand deal get? But I think that we'll see a lot of brilliant creators if that ever happens, or like the next platform that replaces TikTok, if it gets banned, is going to be something that's like TikTok, but without being able to see how many views or comments or likes something got. So I think that's going to come around, and I think we'll see a lot of brilliant people who couldn't get over the hurdle of like failing in the beginning and people knowing that they're failing, really come to the forefront. And then in terms of just like, you know, creator, the way that I think creators are really taking off, I'm really fascinated and I've been trying to learn about it myself, but is Substack seems to really be a huge thing. I think we're going to see that continue to grow. And just like going back to like written posts, like what the internet was in the beginning, which was blog posts, I actually think we're going to see a huge pivot back towards written, like some form of media where it's like written out. I mean, I have a friend, Nikki Reardon, and his videos have just been going so viral. He does also kind of marketing. And he was telling me that like, his videos that go the most viral, he actually like writes out a script before he even films, even if it's like a vlog. Like there's just something about the part of the brain that's different when you're like scripting something. And so whether that comes in the form of Substack, whether it comes in the form of scripting videos in a way that we don't really see people do anymore, or like blog posts, I know for me on LinkedIn, I've like had a few things go viral where I'm just physically writing out my thoughts, and I've never articulated my thoughts that way before online. So yeah,
LinkedIn. I think we'll see. LinkedIn, I think, is all about the long posts. Like those are the ones that do the best. It's like, it's when you break it down and you're giving value and like little flavor of emojis. It's kind of like what Instagram, like Instagrammy, but like, but professional.
Yeah. I love LinkedIn. LinkedIn is where like, I feel like it's like a hidden gem that like no one talks about, but I mean, people like in our realm talk about it, but when I talk to big creators, they're never like, oh, LinkedIn's like something I prioritize. But I mean, it's where the people with the biggest pockets are. Like if you want to get a brand deal, post on LinkedIn, post your idea on LinkedIn and tag the brands. And like, I bet you a CMO or like, even if it's just someone who works on the marketing team is going to like DM you or something. So I think written posts, the way that the internet was, you know, it always swings like a pendulum. I think we'll see it kind of swinging back in that direction soon.
I love that. I would like to see that more. Like, I know for me, I love TikTok too. I mean, like TikTok, has allowed for me to be a better person.
Me too.
And like find more fun interests and things. Like it's helped me through stuff. Like it's a lot for me to understand my son's autism and my husband's ADHD and stuff in a way I never could have understood it before. And that allows me to be a better mom and a better wife, which is kind of important in my opinion. Yeah. I find things to do. So I told Coco this before. She's like, you're the last thing I have to do before I turn off my computer and go to Japan with my family. But so I found things to do. I got it by searching on TikTok, like things. Cause like, I am so sick of TripAdvisor lists.
I know.
Like, you know, and so like finding things to go places to, and then you can like, things that are for like singles or for couples or for, but I'm like, I need the stuff for the families and the kids and things like that, you know, like those kinds of things. Like it's taught me about like things I like, new hobbies and interests, like with nerd culture and D&D. Like it's just, it's fun. What's so funny. I am a content, like yo girl. Like if I had, I'm a long form content creator. I want to educate you. I want to have a long conversation. I want to spend time together. I'm going to talk at you super fast. All my hands. I do not create the good short videos. I don't. And I don't know if it's just like, I don't know if it's what it is. I really don't. Cause like, I want to say things like, I don't know if I'm too old. I don't know if it's just like not for me, if I'm just too busy with my life. Like, no, it's cause I just, it's medium alike.
Yeah.
But I would be really sad if it left, but I really love being able to get quality content that I can read and or skim in a long post. Yeah. And we see like the merging of those two things, Instagram. Like my Instagram is very tailored to like short videos, like short audios that loop a lot. They're like the 5 to 15 second ones. And then there's the long post where it's like, let's get context with it, let's get the information in it. We're gonna hack the algorithm with short videos and long posts. People have to read it longer, right?
Yes.
And so like we can see, I think that sort of thing happening there. But yeah, emails, notes that we have in like with LinkedIn, that you can do like the newsletters in LinkedIn, the long posts in there, you know, using your descriptions with the community tab on YouTube. So I think that like text is I love this prediction. I know my prediction that I'm seeing come to life, and that I like, this is the hill I die on, is that brands are going to become creators. And I got the best email that verified this in a way I never thought possible. And it was that John Deere is hiring a chief a tractor, it's like something in tractor, and I died because it's like John Deere. I'm like, what? Tractor in chief, I think is what it is.
Oh, that makes me think of
officer. They're looking for a chief tractor officer, and I died. And I was like, it's an in-house creator. That person that gets that job will be making almost $200,000 too. It's like $193,000 salary to be the chief tractor officer for John Deere. And you're making, and they're starting off with creating TikTok content. And I'm like, man.
I'm like, I can drive a tractor. Like I said, they got a paycheck. I got a talent. Like, what do you guys think? No.
We can do some shorts and a flannel and like some braids. Yes. Like, we can make it work. And the hat.
Yes. That makes me think of. Yes, there's a brand called Bondi Sands. They're a tanning company out of Australia. And I have a friend on TikTok. His username is Gay Man with a Spray Tan. His name is Colton. And he did this whole video where it was like him applying for a job. And like it ended up being a whole campaign where he's now their chief tanning officer. And he's like a creator who's like the face of their brand, which is like, so like what you're predicting, what you're saying. It's like so similar. Which is cool.
It's so fun. What advice do you have for creators that we can just walk away with and go do right now? What do you think we should do?
My biggest advice, and I've been saying this like since I started, is literally like fail upwards. If you feel stuck, make videos that are going to get zero views, but do it because you're getting like if you want to make content that you're passionate about right now and you feel stuck, you have to be willing to fail. And I always say, look at your content like a crystal ball, whether it's podcast episodes, whether it's TikToks, whatever. If you could look in that crystal ball and it's like your 27th video doing this new thing is going to be the one that like changes your life. If you make one video a month, it's going to take over 2 years. If you make one video a day, if you fail once a day, you're going to get there in a month. So like, I always tell people, like the biggest hurdle that I see with creators and brands is they're terrified to fail. But like the most successful people, they're usually the ones that fail the most. You just only see their wins. So you don't know. So go out there and fail today, and you're going to be so much closer to the videos you actually want to do.
I love that. It's a great, I love that. Fail upwards. It's the best. And I like, it goes along with what I say all the time. Start, suck, get better. It's all you can do.
Love that.
Okay, yeah. Ready? You can find the links to Coco social medias for She's Predicting Trends and talking to really cool up and coming musicians, theater style. We'll have the links to all that in our show notes over at womenofvideo.com. Remember, Coco, you are amazing, and everyone listening are impossibly amazing. Until next time, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.